To get us started and set the tone for this year's conference, our first presentation, Adopting Smart Strip-Till Methods to Strengthen Soils and Increase Yields. Farming variable soils in southwestern Minnesota, Jerry Ackerman has a goal of raising 200 bushel corn on 140 pounds of nitrogen. At 190 bushel yields, he and his wife Nancy are pretty close to achieving it. Aggressive but calculated experimentation with fertilization practices and strip-till trials on their 1,200-acre operation in Lakefield, Minnesota, have helped decrease input costs and overcome climate challenges to raise corn yields that are commonly 20 bushels per acre above the county average. This morning, Jerry will break down their motives and methods for reducing the ratio of applied nitrogen per bushel of corn to increase production and explain why sometimes the highest yields aren't always the most economical. So please join me in welcoming Jerry Ackerman.
Thank you. Okay, everybody can hear me okay? Good. I have to use notes. To be honest with you, I'm a little bit rushed this morning. I called down to the front desk and I thought, well, you know, I got to have time to go through my notes again and everything. So I'll leave a wake-up call for 6:30. And I'm laying there, and of course they got these really good curtains and everything. You don't see too much. I thought, God, it's got to ring pretty doggone quick. Well, anyway, I thought, I better go to the bathroom, take my watch there, see what time it is. 7:38. And I was supposed to be down here at 8:30, and of course Nancy wants to look presentable. That takes a little bit of time. But first of all, I'd like to say a few thank yous to the people that put together this conference. I think they did a great job. We got a lot of things going on. The many people who've helped us and advised us along the way, our agronomists at Extended Ag in Lakefield, people like Ray Archuleta, who's going to be our next speaker, has encouraged me along the way, guys like Dave Brown, Jamie Scott, and many, many more whom I can't all place. But the main person I'd like to thank is Nancy for putting up with me and all the trials that I try all the time, for putting together my PowerPoint presentation for me. Actually, I felt like I was still growing up this morning. I got a lecture about slow down. You're always going 100 miles an hour. No swearing. Stay focused along the way. And she keeps me pretty straight and narrow. So thank you. Okay, let's go to the next slide. This is where I call home, and Jackson County, Minnesota. We farm, of course, 1,200 acres, and we have one-third corn, one-third soybeans, and one-third alfalfa. And this picture was just taken last year, and I thought, wow, you can see a long ways. We're pretty flat up there. In fact, we're kind of lucky. If you look in the upper left-hand corner, and I got a new toy here. Nancy thought I had to be professional, so now I have a laser pointer. Right up there, we've got the Minnesota soybean processors. Out in the center, we've got Cargill terminal up there. Off to the right, which didn't make the picture, is Heron Lake Bioenergy. And we're kind of lucky, because within a 50-mile radius, we have 3 soybean processor plants and I think 18 ethanol plants. So we've got a pretty good market. If you want to expand that to 80, you can probably add 5 more ethanol plants and another soybean processing plant. Actually, how I came here was I was at the no-till convention, which I had, that was my first, to be honest with you. And we were having lunch, and Jack and Daryl were talking to me, and I was talking about how we've done this. And I always tell people, you know, I started strip-tilling 15 years ago. Nancy said, you better stop and think about that. You've been telling that for the last 3-4 years. It's probably more like 16 to 18, maybe even close to 20. Now, you got to remember, before I started this, I had a Steiger four-wheel drive, I had a 50-foot digger, I had a 10-bottom plow, and then later we went to a chisel plow. You know, we got to be conservation-minded. And we had 30-inch row corn, and we were already drilling soybeans at that time. And I remember when this started, as our co-op had just bought a new ag chem interrogator with variable rate fertilizer. And I don't know if I got a sign at the end of the driveway or what. Of course, they come talk to me, Jerry will try anything. I thought it made sense. You're putting the fertilizer where it should be. If you got plenty over here, you're not doing it. And of course, they said, we got to do grid sampling now. I said, okay, well, let's do that. Well, then I got the bill. I was like, holy cow, I've never paid that much for soil sampling before. But also at that same time, a friend of ours, Brian Steen from Jackson, who was actually on the board of FCA Co-op, said, you know, you guys really need to try this strip tilling. And of course, my first thing is, what the heck is strip tilling? And he said, well, they got this machine, it's kind of like a toolbar, and it goes along and they got colders and stuff and it tears up the soil, and they put the fertilizer down there about 8-10 inches deep. And then he said, you plant right on this strip. He said, the only thing you really need is maybe some row cleaners. If there's a clod left in the spring, it knocks it aside, which I had at that time. And he said, I took 80 acres. And he said, I did my same analysis on one half, spread it out, worked it in with a field cultivator. And he said, I did this strip till on the other half. And he said, I got 10 bushel an acre gain just by putting it in a strip. And we kind of visited about it, and I thought, well, I like 10 bushel an acre gain. So that first year, we gave him 50 acres because the co-op had bought this strip till machine, and he, being on the board of directors, thought, you know, I've got to tell the people I represent what I think of it. And we gave the co-op 50 acres, and then we had our farm that we went variable rate. And of course, on the rest of it, I'm still running my Steiger up and down the field, and I got my planter going and everything. And he was right. We gained 8 to 10 bushel that first year on our strip till. We also gained 8 to 10 bushel where we did our variable rate. So the next year we increased our strip till and got the same results. I thought, well, this is pretty doggone good. So finally, after the third year, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, okay, we're getting 8 to 10 bushel more on our strip till and on the variable rate. But our variable rate was costing us $18 to $20 an acre more in fertilizer. Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that one out. It's a no-brainer. We're going all strip till. And about that same time, we just bought a no-till drill. So we went from the big equipment, kind of actually started downsizing after that point. In fact, to be honest with you, that 50-foot digger is still sitting there in the back corner of the farm. I should have gotten rid of it years ago. It's not worth anything now. They don't want the new, bigger, better version. So with that, let's go to the next slide. People ask me, why do you strip till? Well, I go on the website for Iowa down there at Ames. They make a yearly thing with the high and the low and the average. I use the average prices. And I used a disc chisel, because nobody uses a straight chisel plow anymore, $17.80 an acre. Then you got your dry fertilizer application at $4.90. I'll disagree with that. In our area, it costs $8 an acre, but we'll use the averages. And then you got your anhydrous with a toolbar at $12.25. You remember, you got to have one pass to work that fertilizer in the spring, $14.05, with a total of $49 an acre. Then they got the dry bulk strip till cost per acre at $17.15. I'd probably disagree with that. Up in my area, the cheapest is $18. The co-ops are charging $20 now, and they are talking about going up. But the difference is $31.85 an acre. Now that means my neighbor down the road who's still doing everything conventionally, I'm $31 ahead. And of course, I've been telling people how great strip till is and everything. Yeah, we've heard that story. But let's go to the next slide, because one guy said, well, I'm gonna go all dry fertilizer. Okay, we'll take that anhydrous out of there. So we still got our disc chisel at $17.80, our dry fertilizer at $4.90, one pass with a field cultivator, and it's $36.75. So either way, $19.60, that's about $20 an acre that I'm ahead. Now, I don't know if any of you guys read the farm magazines. I get plenty of them and I read them all the time. One thing I read about is we got to cut costs if we're going to be competitive and stay in the game. That's a good place to start. Excuse me. I was always worried about end loss. Remember when I first did this, everything went on in fall. We had a straight rate of N, P, and K, and we were using anhydrous in the strip. And of course, I'm always worried about N loss. The co-op always says, put on 20, 30, maybe 40 pounds more, you know, anhydrous is cheap. That way, if you lose a little bit, you're still there. Well, I'm kind of conservative. If I pay for it, I want it. Nancy has another term for it, being tight. But, and we had a few springs that were wet, and the co-op would say, well, maybe you better think about side dressing here. You know, we probably lost some of our N. And I thought, oh, God darn it. And I thought, you know, I was coming home one day with a pickup. Of course, it's fall, it's below 50 degrees. You got to be down that low to put on your anhydrous. And I came by just about a mile from home, and they were putting on anhydrous, and they'd just turned around and taken off. And I couldn't get my breath in a pickup with the windows rolled up. And I thought, you know, something's got to change. So the next year, I went to the co-op and I said, we're going all dry fertilizer. They tried to talk me out of it. They said, you can't put that much N down dry in the strip. You're going to burn your corn. I said, what do you mean? We're putting down 140, 50, 60 pounds of anhydrous down there. You're putting it down there 8 to 10 inches deep, they said. Well, yeah, it's supposed to be down there. So we went all dry, and it worked quite well. And I don't remember how many years we did it, 3, 4, 5, 6, something like that. Time flies when you're having fun, you know. And then they'd come back and they'd say, well, you know, we had a really wet spring. Maybe you should side dress some more N. I thought, doggone it, anyway, I'm getting tired of this. Always put on more N, put on more N. So we decided if we got to come back and side dress, we're going to cut this down. Now we put 30 to 40 pounds in the strip. Now we're using ESN, time-release fertilizer. We're using stabilizer on our phosphorus and everything. And then we're side dressing 100 pounds of 32% nitrogen. Now there was another first. I'm always trying these first-time things. Remember originally I canned variable rate fertilizer because it was costing me $18 to $20 an acre more. Well, as of the last 3 years now, what are we doing? Variable rate fertilizer in our strip till. And it seems to be working quite well. One interesting point, I remember the first year we switched to all strip till and no-till beans. We're on farm business management record keeping. And we were closing out in books, and our cooperator says, there's something wrong here. I said, well, what do you mean? Well, you haven't got enough fuel. He said, there's over $4,000 difference here. And I said, well, no. You know, I get done combining beans. I call a co-op, say, okay, here's the maps, go strip till. I get done with corn, I'm done. I wash the combine, clean up the semis, put everything away. That's quite a savings. And remember, in this atmosphere of cutting costs, that's a good place to cut costs. Now, 2016 was a new experience for me. And what happened, we actually had a test plot with the University of Minnesota where they rented a few acres. We did all kinds of things. We did no-till, we did strip-till, we did cover crops, different fertilizer and so on. And they had a field day in September. And of course, we do a lot of work with our watershed. And they said, well, we really want to have a field day after harvest so people can look at your cover crops, they can look at your strip-till. So I called the co-op, because they weren't getting there. They'd actually called for our maps a week ahead, and I thought, oh good, it's getting down here. They're talking rain next week and everything, and here it is, a day or two before this thing, and I called up and I said, say, do you think we could at least get this field done so people can see it? Well, the dispatch lady kind of said, well, it'll be a stretch. And remember, I'm the guy out promoting this. Evidently, I promoted too well because they had too many people to do. And she made the comment, and if we don't get it done this fall, we're not doing it in the spring because we got too many other things going on. And I thought, well, thanks a lot. And I was a little perturbed, would be a good word, rather than what I was thinking of saying. And my wife Nancy said, you know, if we got to line up our own strip till machines, we're going to shop around a little bit, and it was a good thing. We actually saved some money at a competing co-op. And so we go ahead and do that, but we had to get our own strip-till machine lined up in the spring. And I mean, I was a little hot that fall, and I remember it was a neighbor just down the road, had a New Year's Eve party, had a brand new shop, had it all cleaned out, the kids could play games. Of course, there was probably a few cocktails consumed along the way too, a lot of good food. Why don't we go to the next slide? And that was Matt Henning, and Matt has a Soil Warrior machine, and looks like a pretty well-built machine. He's had it, I think he told me, 15 years already. And he said, don't worry, Jerry. And that night, there was a couple other guys there with strip-till machines. I actually had four people tell me, don't worry, Jerry, we'll get it done in the spring. So if you got to have friends with strip-till machines. And Matt actually has his own tender wagon there, and I got him the maps for the fields he was going to do. And I said, well, you just talk to Clark Bumgard at New Vision Co-op there, and we'll get this going. Let's go to the next slide. And he called me. He says, well, I'm going on your farm there, Jerry. And I thought, well, I better go out and check this out. And I got out there, and I thought, huh, that's crazy. I don't see any enderos. How the heck does he know what's going on? Why don't we go to the next slide? And he's cruising up and down a field, I don't know, 6-7 miles an hour, really doing a nice job. One thing to take note, you know, I said we're doing cover crops, and there's a story we'll talk about tomorrow why there's no cover crop on this field. But we can go to the next slide on that. Matt explained, he said, well, I use all track tractors. And he said, when you turn, that kind of mounds it up a little bit on the end like that. So he said, I get here ahead of the fertilizer, and I lay out the field, and then I do my endrows last, so you got nice endrows. And I appreciate that. I don't know how he does it. I'm a little bit technically challenged. I use our agronomy service to set up all my lines and stuff. He hands the card to me. They come and load it, and I go plant. Oh, endrows. Hit the button. There they are. Works great. Our weather this year was screwed up. We had our April weather in March, and we had our March weather the end of April. And I believe this was April 12th. Both him and another person called up and said, hey, it's fit, let's go. And I thought, yeah, we better do this, because if it gets closer to planting time, normally we're planting around the 20th of April. A few guys speed it up a little bit. But RMA says, where I live, if you plant before April 15th, you're not going to get covered by insurance. So let's go to the next one. And of course, there's me planting that field. I got auto steer now. You got to remember, when I started, the only people I had auto steer was the fertilizer applicators. And of course, it was kind of like cultivating. You put the hood down the center, you know, and you'd be looking around a little bit, and here'd be some nice looking lady waving, and I'm waving back. And it's like, oh man, get back on the row here. And I know they've had studies that say get it right on top of the row. It's 2-3 bushels. I can't say for sure. We've saw our yields come up over the years, but it's worked well for me. And why don't we go to the next page? This actually was our local co-op. It was taken 2-3 years ago. That is a 24-row Blue Jet machine. We have two co-ops that each have 24 rows. The other machines in our area are... we've got two Blue Jets that I'm aware of. The Kraus Gladiator, we got 3 or 4 of those. We've got some Orthman One Trippers, some Hinneker, which is made right at Mankato, Minnesota. And we actually have 1 or 2 farmer-built strip-till bars. They see something on this one or that one that they like, and so they built their own. And let's go to the next slide. Remember I talked about our cover crops. This happens to be Dale Hessman from Okabena, Minnesota, and he was one of the other guys that said, we'll get you done, Jerry. And between them two guys, they had all our acres done in a day and a half. Did a very good job. And you'll notice our cover crop is coming here. It's April 11th. I said the 12th. I guess I'm off a day. That was the day I shot this picture, evidently. But let's go to the next page. And I happened to walk around Dale's machine. It's a little bit different, and we've actually hired different people to compare strip-till machines to our co-ops. And you know what? When it come down to the end, Nancy runs our combine, and she's a stickler with her yield monitor. She actually got within 0.5% on our corn yield and within 550 bushels on our soybean yield. So when she gives me the numbers, I believe her. But I happened to walk around Dale's machine, kind of a rolling basket type thing, and I thought that's a little different. And then I walked around to the front. Let's go to the next picture. And I was going to tell Dale, I think he hit a rock or something. This colder's bent over. Then I got noticing every other one was that way. Evidently, it was designed that way. Seemed to do a good job, so we'll see. But that wasn't my big worry. Let's go to the next slide. You notice, of course, with the cereal rye in there, it got a little soddy. And normally this is done in the fall, and you go through a freeze-thaw cycle, and you know, you got a nice smooth strip in the spring. Had me a little bit worried. Let's go down to the next slide. Looks a little bit rough. I thought, is this going to dry out, clear down to however deep? You know, they're telling me they're going 8-10 inches. But let's go to the next slide again. I thought, well, it's too early to plant. RMA is not going to let me do it. A few guys were planting. And we had a screwed up spring. I mean, we had guys that replanted two and three times. I know at coffee at church, one guy said, "This is a fourth time, I'm not doing it again." And but all of my worries kind of went away. We did get a little bit of rain. Remember I said it was screwed up. It started out really nice. We had some corn in, and then it started raining, and then it rained, and it rained, and it kept raining, and it's still raining up there. Let's go to the next slide. I actually set them row cleaners pretty heavy. I almost had a furrow when I planted, because I wanted to make sure to get all the clods and root balls out of the way. This was taken on June 30th. We'd had our side dressing done. Strip doesn't look too bad. We got a nice stand. Let's go to the next slide. Pretty doggone even. Got our cover crop seeded. That's coming already. And for all of my worries, why don't we go to the next slide? This was taken probably 3-4 weeks ago. It was before the corn's tasseled. We got a nice even stand across everything. That crop looks pretty doggone good. And of course, I'm always trying new things. So let's go to the next slide. This happens to be one of my agronomists that extended ag services. His name is Brock Basilian, young guy, just got married. I don't know how he thinks about agronomy all the time. She's pretty good looking. But he farms a little bit with his dad, and he bought a Rogator, and he set it up for side dressing 32% nitrogen. In fact, he told me he can even variable rate his fertilizer. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I said, we should try an experiment, Brock. I'm always open for another experiment. So we took this field, and instead of putting on our 100 pounds of N, we put on 50 at the V4, V7, somewhere in there. And this was actually done July 6th. We added the other 50 pounds of nitrogen. Now, we're not going to know these results until the combine rolls, but it'll be interesting to see if we gain enough yield by splitting that to cover the cost of an extra application. Let's go on to the next slide. And, of course, Brock, being a young guy, trying to be conservative, he made his own drops. And I said, well, what about the Y thing and stuff like that? He said, well, it's probably good, maybe better than this. I don't know. But he said, I've done a lot of studies. I read a lot of studies, he said, and it's not more or less that. It's get the N there for the crop. And it seemed to work quite well. So we're going to have to check this fall to see what that, you know, experiment comes out to be. Why don't we go on to the next slide? Now, the reason I did this is back in March, I'm reading Farm Journal. And Ken Ferry and Missy Bauer, I love their articles. They do a lot of research on growing and everything. But what really caught my eye was this test was on strip tilling. And they were showing several different scenarios of when to apply nitrogen, how much, and whatever. But what caught my eye was at site one, they had 251 pounds of total N. At site two, 255. But the yield was 210 bushel. Now remember, I've stated this the last couple of years, I'm trying to grow consistent 200 bushel corn on 140 pounds of N. And we're pretty doggone close. We're in the mid-190s now. I gotta admit, we've got one farm we mine gravel out of. It's never gonna make 200 bushel averages. But I've got some 175s out of it. So I think we're headed on the right track, and we'll see what happens. Let's go on to the next slide. Now, of course, Daryl and Jack have told me, well, what do you think is coming new with strip till? And I'm thinking, okay, you got the machine, you're putting the fertilizer down, you got different attachments. How the heck do I know? And of course, this was back in February and March, and I got talking, and this is Randy Wertzma from Rushmore, Minnesota. And happened to know Randy for a couple years now, never met him in person until the spring because I've been selling him cover crop seed. But my agronomist said, you should go talk to him. He's strip tilling the manure and he's planting on them strips. So, of course, we were done with corn. We were trying to get soybeans done and we got rain again, couldn't go anymore. Couldn't cut alfalfa, it was too wet for that too. So I called up Randy. I said, Randy, could I come over? Yeah, he says, I want to bring my camera. Okay, this field is actually planted. Cover crop's not dead yet. Randy is on his second or third year of cover crops. I says, well, what do you think of this? He said, well, I've actually been doing this 5-6 years. And he said, I'll tell you, last year we averaged 256 bushel dry on 573 acres. Boy, that makes you sit up and take note. I think everybody's going to be doing that. I see, let's go on to the next picture. And of course, they said, Randy, can I take some pictures of your equipment? Yeah, jump in the pickup. It's on another farm. And we go over there and I said, well, you want to pull this out of the shed? I think his comment was, are you nuts? I ain't going to move all this machinery. I got all my planting equipment hooked up. He said, you take your pictures in here. So I apologize. They're maybe not the greatest pictures in the world, but it'll get the thought out. This happens to be a soil warrior machine. You can see the air pressure there. And I said, well, how does this work? And Randy said, well, the big thing is right up here is this distributor pressurizes that so all your hoses get the same amount so you don't have one lighter than the other. Let's go on to the next one. Now, this machine is big. This is what they call a double tanker, 13,500 gallons a load. And he's got a big tractor that pulls it. But he said, I've had some problems with it. Let's go to the next slide. He said, if you start turning a little too quick and don't have that thing out of the ground, it really bends things up. And he said, I did that twice. So I went back to Soil Warrior, he said, and said, we got to do something different. So what they did is they put a pivot point in right here. And they've got a little bit of give in that, so if Randy's not quite on his game, he's got a little forgiveness there. And it seemed to work quite well. He said, this is the third set of tanks I've had this strip-till machine on. And I apologize, I'm using this one over here because I can't see that screen the best, but you get the right idea. Let's go on to the next picture. I happened to notice the blades on that, and I said, gee, that looks pretty deep, pretty heavy duty. He said, yeah. He said, I wear out a set about every 2.5, 3 years, I'll have to change them. And he said, you know, where you live, you don't have so many rocks. He said, I got rocks over here, so you got that airbag and stuff, and it can bend them a little bit. But he's made it work, and he's made it work well. Now, let's go on to the next slide. Randy told me, when you got them tanks with 13,500 gallons, it actually mushrooms up the soil on either side of them tires. So Randy bought himself a Salford vertical till machine, and he said, I'm not strictly strip-till because of that reason. He said, I go with that in the fall at an angle. You go about 8-10 miles an hour, kind of smooths things out. You can still see the strips. And he said, it's RTK, so I've got my planting maps already. And it worked quite well for him. Now let's go on to the next page. Little did I know, some people that live 3 miles from me have been strip-tilling manure for the last 3 years. Salada Brothers, Brian and Mark. And I said, can I take some pictures? Sure, it's sitting outside, he said, right by one of the barns. So I went over there. Let's go on to the next one. They happen to have this one here is a cyclone manure applicator built by Zosky's Machine out of Iowa Falls, Iowa. Again, you'll notice the colder out front, the lead colder goes pretty deep. They shoot the manure down in there, have a couple of colders that close it up, of course. Go on to the next one. And again, there we have the distributor up there. Pretty straightforward machine. They've used it 3 years, and he said, we love it. Actually, he said, when we first did this, we still worked our field in the spring. And I said, well, why'd you do that? Well, we were worried about hairpinning, things like that. But he said, you know, we got a different set of row cleaners and discovered we didn't have to. And he said, it's an extra trip. It's an extra cost. And remember, all the farm magazines would tell us, we got to do it cheaper. Well, they're figuring out ways how to do it. Let's go on to the next one. He did say one machine that he's hearing quite a bit about, and is called VTI. And I looked at it. Looks like a pretty well-built machine. Got a distributor up there that works quite well, I guess. And I didn't find this out till just the day I left to come down here. Bruce Brunk from Rushmore, Minnesota, just purchased one of these. And I said, well, I went on the internet to get these pictures, and I said, I can't figure out where they're made. He said, I'll give you a call back. And he called me last night. It's actually made in Washington, Iowa, and looks like a pretty good machine. He said, I bought it from a distributor out of Cortland, Minnesota. Let's go on to the next one. And they're actually even promoting putting it in the crop. Now, personally, I don't think I would do it. I'd try and get it on before the crop. To me, it looks like there could be some compaction issues with that, although some of these older barns will not hold a year's worth of manure. Maybe that's an option to use. Now, that's my story on strip-till. And I'm not going to stick to it. I'm willing to change. If I find something that I think is better, I'm going to use it. But I'm always going to keep my eye out. I'm going to keep listening and see what I can find that's better for me and for Nancy. With that, I thank you very much. I don't know if there's any questions afterwards. I got here a little late. Nobody told me what's going to happen other than here's a microphone, we're going to put it on you and get going. So I thank you all very much. What's that? We're going to do questions?
Yeah, we do have some time for a few questions if some folks have something they'd like to pick Jerry's brain with here. So we do have some mics in the audience here, so just raise your hand, we'll find you. And there you go, a couple over here.
When do you terminate the rye after you look like you spring strip-tilled into cereal rye? And then planted corn, when did you terminate the rye?
Well, RMA up where I live, and I have beef with them, I've went round and round with them a couple times already, they say where I live I have to kill it a week ahead of time. And actually tomorrow I have to talk about about cover crops and how we're managing them. There's been times it'd be beneficial to leave that rye grow if it's wet. I've actually got some slides to prove it, and it's been 20 to 25 bushel yield gain because of that reason. Typically, I would say RMA makes people lie because you have to report when you did it. Well, what was the date I had to do it? Yeah, we got it done by then. Normally, we'll go out a week or two ahead. If it's a really wet spring, I like to leave it grow because it soaks up extra moisture. If it's going to be a dry spring, I like to get in there and kill a little early. I'm going to save that moisture. I'm pretty flexible. I've been doing it just long enough now that I'm getting smarter every year. I find this thing, maybe sometimes it's planned, sometimes it's not, that helped me out. We're up there in southwest Minnesota, so we're a little bit colder climate in the spring. I know Jerry Perkins is here from Worthington. He actually said he started no-tilling 30 years ago. And he struggled a little bit. I mean, we had some wet, cold springs, and the strictly no-till didn't work. But he said, when I went to the strip-till, that solved my problem. And I used to think, well, we got this nice black strip. You know, it's going to warm up quicker. I've kind of changed my tune. Dr. Shannon Brown out of Brookings, South Dakota, made the comment, and she explained it very well. When you have a cover crop growing, that plant's absorbing sun, which is heat. Where does that heat go? Goes in the ground. I do like my strip till. I used to think it warmed up. I don't know. I think maybe the strip till with a cover is a clear ticket. I don't know if that helps you out any.
So have you had cases where you've planted and waited on terminating the rye? Had the corn come up before you terminated?
Oh, I had one time. The rye was in the boot stage because it kept raining in 2013. We couldn't get in to kill it. And that's where I seen the big gain. And I was worried, you know, because I'm probably under the eye up there a little more. I mean, everybody drives by, what's Jerry up to this year, you know? And so I'm thinking, you know, I got to follow the rules. And I went into NRCS and I said, look, we can't get in there to spray. And he said, that's a God-given thing, you know, you intended to. We're not going to hold you to that. You know, you're still covered by insurance, so just get in there and do it when you can. That answer what you were kind of getting at?
Do you have any thoughts on how you get by using 140 pounds of nitrogen and getting 190 bushel corn yield?
I didn't quite catch all that. I have bad hearing. I grew up in these year-round cabs with 40-20s, you know.
Do you have any thoughts on how you can get by with 140 pounds of nitrogen and grow 190 bushels of corn?
Well, I guess getting back to Nancy calling me a tightwad, you know, I am trying to get always more with less. And yeah, genetics has helped us. I'll definitely say, you know, our corn genetics have gotten better. Again, I was putting it all down early, and I was probably losing some, and that's why we kind of split it up. That's why we're doing an experiment this year, splitting it again. Is that going to help? Ken Ferry says it is. I've got to prove it to myself, and I know when I do test plots, it's a full half mile long, and I want to compare it over more than 5 acres. I want a, you know, 80 or 100 acre field that I'm checking it on and try these different things. I think the strip till has helped. We proved that right off the bat. We got 10 bushel gain. Some of these little things, It's always that saying, it isn't one big thing you do, it's all these little things. And I just made the mind up that we don't need 250 pounds of nitrogen to grow 200 bushel corn. I've had agronomists tell me, actually, they feel with the genetics we have, we should be able to produce consistent 200 bushel corn at 120 pounds. Well, when I can do it consistently at 200 on 140, I'm going to try and back it down to 120 and see what I can do. We're pretty doggone close. You know, we're running a mid 190s right now. We've bumped over 200 here and there. So I think maybe now with the cover crops, we're going to get there to that 200.
Nope. Over here.
I was wondering, what do you use for plant population with your corn?
I guess we've done some experimenting, extended ag. Andy Ness is up there, is a great guy to work with. I mean, he takes our yield monitor and maps and really makes sense out of them. We've found 34,000 is our best population, and we've proved it. He did a field where we had actually four replications in a 90-acre field, and it was amazing. I mean, we got up to some 40, 42,000 plant populations, and I'm riding along with Nancy in a combine while we're waiting for the semi to get full, and you could literally see within 8 to 10 feet that population change, because when we went to the higher population, it got shorter. And you'd swear, coming into them shoots on that corn head, that that corn was 40 bushel an acre better. To be honest with you, it wasn't. There was a lot of ears, they were a little bit smaller, but the yield was within a couple bushel of their 34,000. Now, granted, on this farm where we mine gravel out of, we get down to 18,000 at places. And we got a few places on that farm where we're above 34. The variable rate's supposed to be saving some money. You know, I put the electric drives on my planter. That probably made me more money than anything, because a lot of our farms have point rows because we have drainage ditches through them. So for us, we've proven 34. Maybe we'll change our mind next year. I don't know. When the yield maps and dollars and cents talk to me, that's when I listen.
Got time? Oh, got another one back.
Yeah, we're on. I lost track of your nitrogen timing evolution. So have you gone away from the fall applied nitrogen and all in the spring now, or are you still putting a certain amount of N down in the fall?
We put, like I say, about 40 pounds in a strip. I'm always worried about spring. I think there's going to be some there. That's why I went away from fall application, because they're always telling me, well, we probably lost it. And being the conservative guy I am, if I paid for it, doggone it, I want it out there to use. And so we've went with 40 pounds in a strip. We do put down a little liquid in furrow with a planter, and then we try to come back in and side dress our last 100 pounds at B4 or B6. And it's been working well for us. Now, again, I'm trying another experiment this year. I got to prove to myself that splitting it again has to pay for that extra application and gave me enough bushels to pay for it.
Have you tried strip till with soybeans?
No, I haven't. A good friend of mine, Dave Christopher, who's been doing this probably longer than I have, has a strip till machine, and he strip tills his corn and his beans. And I mentioned we did this test plot with the University of Minnesota. Well, they wanted 30-inch row no-till beans. And of course, we had RMA involved, we had the NRCS, and our NRCS guy said, well, I've got a four-row John Deere we plant sweet corn with, I'll bring that down. Well, it was kind of a busy spring, it wasn't getting done, and they said, the guy gave me a call one day and says, Gal, can you get somebody with that? And I said, well, I've got my drill. I can go 15-inch, 7.5. We could go 50. No, no, we went conventionally. Well, I called up Dave, and I said, Dave, can you do this test plot? Yeah, I just got done with beans. But he said, I don't have a no-till planter. And I says, well, what do you got? Well, I got a John Deere 7200. I got row cleaners. I even got spike closing wheels and drag chains. I said, bring it over. And he gets over there, and here's Dave setting up this tripod, you know, for his RTK auto steer. I said, Dave, what are you doing? Well, I don't have markers. I said, Dave, it's a 12-row machine. I'll count off 6 rows in standard. Just don't hit me. Let me get out of the way when you plant it. And we planted them offset from the row a little bit. Of course, after the first pass, Dave gets out and looks. He says, God, this looks pretty doggone good. I says, yeah, looks good to me. And he says, I don't know if I'm going to strip till my bean ground next year. I didn't get to talk to him. It's been a crazy busy spring. If he did, he was going to do some actually no-tilling with his 7200 John Deere. I don't think it's bad to do it. And I had Dave strip till 1 year because I wanted to compare his machine to the co-op's machine. And Dave was talking about, well, we'll come back and freshen the strips in the spring. I said, what do you mean freshen the strips? Well, Soil Warrior says, you know, you should come back and freshen them. I said, hey, listen, buddy, I'm not paying you for another trip over to field. You're getting one pass. That's it. I'm going to go plant. It's cost cutting. What you got to do?
Got time for another question or two, if anybody's got one.
Back over here. I've been reading more and more about the cereal rye getting in, plugging the tile lines. Is that a concern to you?
About fertilizing what?
About the cereal rye plugging up the tile lines.
You know, I've read that too. We're going to talk about it a little bit tomorrow. I have not seen it. I did hear about it up by Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul area a couple of years ago. A guy had pattern tiled his whole field. He had wheat. And they went in and did a cover crop right after that. And it did plug some tile lines. And they attributed to that because the cereal rye grew so fast, it went straight down and it invaded the tiles. University of Minnesota tells me, kill your cereal rye at 8 to 10 inches because it's a very good scavenger for nitrogen, and it really sucks up the end, and you want it to release in about 30 to 45 days at 8 to 10 inches. The longer you let it grow, the longer it's going to take to release that end back to your crop. Now, I've got pictures tomorrow I'll show. I actually drilled into a field that was waist-high cereal rye. And I did it for water management. I haven't seen the plug tiles. What I've read, this has been down in Indiana area, if I'm correct, Indiana or Ohio, and they had the perfect storm. They got it in, they had a real long fall, the cover crop did great. We had a wet spring down there, from what I understand, starting out, got a lot of growth. I'm probably gonna watch it a little closer. Now that I know that, I may say, well, what's the pros and cons? And do that, and maybe watch, you know, when my timing of killing it off is going to be. I have not seen it on my own farm. I haven't heard about it in our area, but I suppose it is possible. And there's a lot of people in the cover crop industry that are studying it and asking questions of why and how. Something I just got to learn to live with and manage properly.
Time for one more here.
Yeah, it looks like you're doing some spring strips and some fall strips, if I'm following you correct. Do you have a preference, and what does one work better than the other, and where's your fertilizer? When's your fertilizer timing going?
Well, this is the first year we did spring strips. And to be honest with you, I'd prefer it in the fall because we are using covers. It plows some of the covers out, and we get a nice shaped strip. We go through a freeze-thaw cycle. We really got some nice mellow ground in the spring. I have nothing against doing it in spring since we did it this year. Boy, they're really nice, fresh, mellow strips. With the cover, I was a little worried, but it turned out well. So, I'd much prefer fall myself.
All right. Well, thank you again, Jerry. Another round of applause for being here.
Thank you.